Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of Minority Report's podcast and digital series. I am your host. What a shake, you guys. What's happening? I have such a fantastic guest today. I am in shock that he even agreed to be on the show today. Because sometimes, you know, it's like you reach out to folks and they have a lot of big stuff going on and you don't know, you know, if their schedule allows it or, you know, they have even time for you. But this gentleman, hilarious comic, was kind enough to be like, yeah, I'll come be on your podcast. So I'm very excited to have him on. He's going to join us soon. In the meantime, wanted to kind of talk to you guys about how has your week been? How is everyone holding up? I know things are revving up for the elections. People are getting nervous. People are getting jittery about what's going to happen. So I would love to hear your thoughts. I would love to hear what you guys are going through, what you guys are feeling. I mean, this is a really strange time, just a strange time. I was listening to Trump at a press conference yesterday, and he was talking about, a journalist asked him, he said, you know, would you be okay? Would you be open and would you allow, rather, for a peaceful transition to a new president? He goes, we'll see. What other president in the history of the United States has been like, we'll see if it's going to be peaceful? Yeah, we'll see. I'm definitely expecting a side of violence, but we'll see how it goes. It's like never in the history of the United States government presidency have we ever had a president who's like, we'll see. You know, you say we'll see to shit that you're not really sure about. We'll see is more like you'll see. It's not we'll see, it's you see. It's like, I know what the hell I'm going to do. You just don't know what the hell's going to go down. That's what we'll see freaking means. So I am really nervous for you guys. Hi, James. Hi, Tim. How are you guys? Thank you for tuning in. I know Felipe is going to be joining us soon. I'm very, very excited to have this wonderful, wonderful comedian on today. I am waiting for him to log on. Since he's a brown person, so I'm just gonna wait for him because, you know, this is why I don't do shows at 6 p.m. 6 p.m. is too much pressure. 6:15. It's 15 minutes extra, so I like it. So I'm just waiting for him to log on. Joining us now. Yeah, I'm waiting for the wonderful and amazing Felipe Esparza. If you don't know who he is, he is fabulous, is what he is. And I cannot wait to start having a conversation with him. But I would love to hear your thoughts, you guys. I know a lot of you guys get very kind of quiet and you guys just like to hear me rant and rave, which is what I do most of the time. I'm just ranting and raving. But I do want to interact with you guys. I want to hear what you guys have to say. Also, how the hell did it get so hot back up again in Los Angeles? Can anybody tell me why does the weather just keep going? It just keeps fluctuating back and forth. I forget sometimes. Am I in Los Angeles or am I in Pakistan? I can't remember sometimes. It's so friggin' hot. Yeah, I would love to hear what you guys have to say about how you guys are feeling. What the hell is going on? I am legit terrified for all of us, you guys. I'm a citizen, and I'm, like, wondering if they're going to come after my citizenship. They'll be like, listen, you've had a good run here. You've had a good run in America. It's been fun having you for a short period of time. Now we need our citizenship back. So you need to, like, get out of this country and go back to where you came from. And in that response, I would have to be like, Jersey? I went to high school in Jersey. Does that count? No? I have to go back to Pakistan? I don't even know if it's safe at this point because it's the pandemic. So, yeah, I don't know, you guys. I am genuinely nervous for all of us as to what the hell is about to go down. Waiting for Mr. Esparza. That being said, oh, J- James said something. He said, I recommend everyone check their voter registration before the ballots get mailed. I agree with you. Ooh, really? Let's see. Interesting. All right, Felipe says he is in the waiting room, but I don't see him. Let's see here. Why is our friend Felipe not able to get in? We are gonna find out. Try this one. Sorry, you guys. Sometimes we run into technical difficulties, and this is one of those times. So, all right, we are gonna see. Felipe is gonna join us in 2 seconds. James said, I just signed up for ballot tracking with the California Secretary of State. Yeah, I did that too. Then Omar said, what's up, girl? Kiss is Desi MJ. I don't know what that means, but hi, Omar. Nice to see you. I want us to win. I want this orange man gone, you guys. I am tired of seeing orange in the White House. Never did I ever expect to see so much orange, so I don't know what the hell is going on. All right, let's see. Our friend Felipe has seen it. Oops. That's so strange. All right. I don't see him. All right. So weird. So weird. Yeah, I don't know what's going on. Sometimes my shows run, most of the time my shows run really smooth. And then sometimes there's like these little technical stuff, which sucks. I loved it when Trumpy got booed at the Supreme Court. Yes, he did. I love any time, you know, I love any time that Republicans, you know, you use the same chants on them that they use on Democratic candidates, and then they can't handle it, right? It's only good for one way. It's never good the other way around. It's always like that. Always like that. All right, let's see. All right. I don't know what I... All right, we are... Dude, I have the AC literally blasting on top of my head and I am still sweating. Is anyone also this hot? I am like burning up right now. I love it anytime Trump gets insulted and berated in public because, you know, here's the thing about Trump. You can't shame him because he doesn't have any. You can't shame this man. He's just not going to be embarrassed by anything you throw at him. Anything you throw at Trump, he's just going to be like, okay. Because to him, it's always the focus is, how do I stay in power? Do I get the votes? Are my supporters with me? If I go to the ends of the earth and tell them to drink the Kool-Aid and kill themselves with the Do-It, I'm okay. Ooh. Oh, I hear him. I hear he's here. All right. You know what? Sorry about the delay, you guys. Clearly, I messed it up this time, which is something that happens next to never. But I clearly messed up a very important thing. So without further ado, the very hilarious, he has a fantastic special out on Netflix called Bad Decisions. I laughed my ass off. It's also in Spanish called Malas Decisiones. I hope I didn't butcher it. The very funny Felipe Esparza. Felipe, I'm so sorry, my friend. How are you?
Okay. We're here now.
I totally ruined that, didn't I?
I don't know.
Now I got it. It's like losing a crowd and then you got to work to bring the crowd back. It's kind of like that moment, man. I'm so sorry. I don't know what the hell happened. I never mess up links, but apparently I did. How are you? How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Man, first of all, congrats on your special. Hilarious. I think I watched it like twice.
Oh, thank you very much. I was super excited to do the special.
Yeah.
I worked on a Spanish one for about a year.
Yeah. So
going to Mexico, coming back, doing one-nighters.
Yeah.
I really didn't have a lot of time to dedicate to the Spanish one because I was touring a lot in English.
Got it. I don't speak Spanish, but I was wondering because at first I was Spanish watching the English one and then the Spanish one automatically played. And I was like, is it the same material or is it slightly different? Or you talk about different things.
Actually, it's different. It's 20% of the ending is different from the English, and the English one is like 15% different. So it's different.
Okay. All right. You know, I really, I was watching, I was actually reading your Wikipedia page and going back and watching some of your really old stuff. You had a set you did back at the Ice House 7 years ago. And I love watching the growth of comics, right? As a comic, I love to go sometimes watch my own stuff and I cringe and I'm like, oh my God, I was putting that out in the world. How could I?
What were they wearing?
Huh?
What were they wearing?
What were you wearing? You had really short hair. Really short hair. And you were talking about, you talked about a lot of observational stuff. You were talking about, you're gaining weight when a girl starts sucking on your titties.
Wearing a white t-shirt?
You weren't a white t-shirt, no. You have like a jacket on, like a blue jacket on. You're wearing jeans.
Okay.
Your hair is really short. I couldn't
remember that. Que locos.
I couldn't recognize you. I was just like, wouldn't believe it.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, that was 7 years ago. That was a 7 year ago set. I remember watching you the first time. They're gonna laugh at you. And like absolutely falling in love, like, "Who's this guy? He's hilarious."
That special, I was doing a show in Washington D.C. with Alex Raimundo and some other comedians.
Yeah,
and him and I were hanging out outside of, like, we walked to the White House right after the show.
We walked to
the Capitol, the White House, and Federal Building. Our hotel was right next to the Treasury Building.
Oh wow! Yeah. And what theater is this?
We did a show at the Lincoln Center, I think.
Oh, that's at the Lincoln Center. Got it.
It was for National Council La Raza or I don't know what the name of the organization is now. But he asked me if I had a special, and I said, nah, but I want one. I want to do one. And he made a phone call to his manager, and I got a call the next day, and he told me that, get ready because you're going to shoot a special in 2 weeks.
Oh, my goodness.
Bobcat Goldthwait and another comedian, and you're gonna go last.
What? So, did you have enough material to be like, yeah, I'll go up and do it?
Yes, I did have enough material, but I had to put like the material together in 2 weeks.
Oh my God! How many like shows are you hitting up a night to be like, let me just work on this? Or let me work on
that? I walked the night before that show. I walked into a bar called the Sunset Room. In Hacienda Heights, California.
Hell yeah.
They do like open mic comedy there on Mondays.
Yeah.
I went in there and I did like, they introduced me first and I did a whole hour and I just went through my set and I didn't pause for hecklers or anything. I just piled through with ignoring every other chaos that was going around me.
Yeah. Philippe, do you feel like you've been doing comedy since 1994?
Yes.
You've been in the game a long time. I moved from Pakistan in 1995. So, you know, I look at like your journey and I was reading like okay, the one thing that like fascinated the shit out of me is the fact that how bluntly honest you are. And I don't know who wrote your Wikipedia. You're just like, yeah, we illegally came to America. We attempted 3 times coming here. I'm like, dude, I want that kind of confidence. This is fucking amazing. I don't know
who wrote that.
Who wrote that, Felipe? Who knows this?
They're putting it out there, though.
Holy shit.
It's very hard for me to become a citizen.
I don't think you have to worry about that anymore. You married a white girl. You're good, Felipe.
Yeah, I'm in, man.
You're in. This is an
opportunity without going to the hazing.
Exactly. You don't have to go through the hazing path. It's so great. One of the things I was reading about you was like, yeah, you like, it didn't say what age. What age was this that this is happening?
What happening?
That you guys are like the first attempt, like you're in Sinaloa, then you go to Tijuana, and then you guys are making the attempt to come into America.
Five or four.
Do you remember that trip?
No, I don't know my age. I just know when I started kindergarten, it was, I was like the tallest kid.
You were one of those kids who were always the tallest. I was the same way. Always the tallest one. Yes.
But later on, when I got to junior high, I became the shortest for some reason.
Oh, that's interesting. And then what? Did you go to college, Felipe?
I went to off and on community college.
Yes.
What happened was when I came
to college, kids. Yes.
I went to rehab and
yes.
I wasn't planning on going to college, but I wanted to work at UPS.
Okay.
You know, what can Brown do for you?
And, yes.
So the only way to get a job at UPS was to work at go to East LA College. So I said, all right. So I applied for a bunch of classes, and next thing you know, I got a job, not at UPS, but at another place similar to UPS with a bunch of everybody there was college kids, and we were just loading and unloading packages for like 5 hours a day. Just 5 hours, just like, or 4 hours. 4 hours. We only worked 4 hours and a half, half a day. And the rest was good money. We got paid whatever what somebody makes for a day at that job. Okay. But and then I started meeting people, and they said, you know what? If you apply for a Pell Grant, the government will give you money and for scholarships and all that. But I didn't qualify for none of that. But but I like the school, all these programs to make me study. So I ended up staying.
Yeah. Staying at the community college, at the UPS. College,
yeah. I took a bunch of acting classes.
Okay.
Theater, weightlifting.
That sounds like a really cool community college. I didn't go to a community college like that. I went to a shitty, really crappy community college.
Oh, the joke, man. East LA College, they pass out flyers to parties inside of school books.
What?
And when you buy a school book, there's a flyer for a party.
Felipe, what community college is this? East LA Community
College.
What? Dude, it sounds like a party school of community college.
Yeah. And then after that, I got another job while I was doing stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
I applied to LA City College community college, late night. Yeah. This was like late night acting classes for 4 hours.
Wow.
At,
yeah. And, so you always wanted to be an artist. You just knew from a very early age. Like, you're like, I'm gonna be a performer. This is what I'm gonna do.
When I got into LA City College, I was doing stand-up already. But when I got there, I didn't know that they have one of the best theater programs in LA.
Wow.
Like, real theater. Like when I was taking theater 101 there too, I had to go to a lot of the place and critique them. So my job was to write a full-on story about what they did production wise lighting and all that, and I submit that paper. So I went to a lot of places, and I found out that Morgan Freeman went there. Morgan Freeman, because he was Spider-Man of some kids show to watch called The Electric Company.
Oh, wow. East LA. Oh, wow. That's incredible.
LA City College is where Morgan Freeman went. East LA College. I went to both of them.
Okay. And LA City College is the one with the good theater program.
Yeah, one of the best.
Wow. That's amazing. I didn't even know that. That sounds amazing. I want to go back and talk to you a little bit about, you know, that whole journey. Because to me, it's always fascinating. I think so much of who we are as adults is the shit that went down as children, right? It's just like all of it is, all of that comes from childhood, right? So I, you know, you're like, what, about, you said 4 or 5 years old, you guys are making the attempt to come into the U.S. Do you, you don't remember any of those kind of like back and forth trips, hiding, no, like being scared, like what is that?
I don't remember none of that. I just, from what my mom told me, and just from little things I remembered, you know. And when we got to America, we were in Carson, California, and it was like a hub for a lot of immigrants that were coming in from Russia, you know, your country, at different places.
Yeah.
They were all meeting up in Carson and going like, it was like, okay, you're going to go to New York. You're going to go to Milwaukee. You are going to go to Compton. Stay here, you know?
It's like a UPS distribution center. It's like a distribution center
for people. And you go in that van, you go in this van. Hey, you're in the wrong van. And we moved to Boyle Heights right away. My dad was... My dad got his green card and everything right away before us because his family was already established here in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were all a lot of their kids were U.S. citizens already.
Mm-hmm.
And so my dad had a lot of help.
You said that your dad was a wrestler?
No, he wrestled in high school, but we joked around that he wrestled in real life too.
Because why? He was slamming you guys to the ground?
Yeah, and my grandma always would take me to watch professional wrestling as a kid.
Oh, I love them.
My grandma and I were real tight.
Talking about Nacho Libre, like the master?
Yeah, and we went to go watch Roddy Piper when I was a child, and Mil Máscaras, the guy with the M, he was a Lucha Libre wrestler. And I didn't know this, but when he joined WWF back then, which is now WWE, his contract stated that when he joined WWE was that he cannot lose. He goes, I'll be disqualified in a match, but you cannot pin me down.
Wow.
Wow, man. So that kind of made me feel good, you know, to come from another country as a star wrestler, and join another wrestling team and demand that contract. You know, I can't lose.
That's right.
You know, I could get beat up. You could turn half of my mask off, but I cannot lose.
Right.
I like the mentality, man. Like going into the world, no matter what, you know, I cannot lose.
That's right. You know, you talk about joining a gang at a very young age and being 21 and, you know, kind of running away. You did an episode of This Is Not Happening, which is no longer, sadly, on Comedy Central, but it was a great show. And you did this whole story about how you're 21 years old, you're paranoid, this guy has come out and, you know, you beat the crap out of him. He was part of a gang, Felipe?
Yeah, he was. He was part of a gang, and he was bullying people, I guess, bullying me.
He was calling you Batman because you wore Batman shirts.
Yeah.
And you were like, and so what? He's coming and what, like bullying you and being like, you fucking Batman, and you're like, fuck you, puto, I'm going to fuck you up.
No, that's exactly what happened. I was having my business, doing nothing, and I forgot his real name was Steve, and I found out that they named him Batman.
Is he a Mexican guy?
Yeah, Esteban, but his real name was Steve. And I guess the legend was that he was on PCP, and he jumped he jumped off a ledge of a roof and landed in a trash bin and lived. So, and then, like, you know, this guy went to prison most of his teen years. So when he came out of prison, the older guys were messing with him when he was pretty buzzed and said, hey, Batman. And they go, oh, not you, the little guy, the smaller Batman, the new Batman.
The new Batman.
Oh, man, fuck that. There are no new Batman, only Batman. So I was just standing there, man, and the older guys were instigating everything, you know? So I had to fight a grown man.
You have to fight. And what? And how old are you at the time? You're 20?
20 years old, 19, you know?
Okay.
I got people that were coming out of prison in their late 20s, 30 years old, 31.
Wow.
Kids that went to prison when they were 18, 17. And I'm just a guy out here. You know, you were locked up when I was 7. What do I know?
Right. I mean, so what about your parents? Your parents aren't like, okay, what crowd are you hanging out with? Like, what the hell's going on?
My parents were always working. My mom was, she was a school nurse assistant, and then she became the playground manager of the elementary school. So she would work from 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. with a bunch of kids.
Got it.
So a lot of the stuff happened to me after I was 18 years old. A lot of my kids, a lot of my friends, they evolved. You know, we all evolved. We started as good kids. And then, you know, we just followed what everybody did.
Sure. Because, you know, also there's this form of peer pressure, right? You're just like, what am I going to be, a fucking square in the middle of all this? Like, no, I'm a fucking goody two shoes. Like, no, I'm going to be one of the cool
kids. Oh, yeah, man. Me, or like, I remember I was standing with someone and they asked that kid, so what's up? You ready to get jumped in? And like, you're surrounded by 10 guys, 15, 7 guys. I mean, you say no, you say yes, you're going to get beat up for it.
Precisely.
What are you doing here? And you're going to get, and if you say yes, you're going to join them. So
That's right. You have a wow. Did you also
say that for a long time, man?
Say that again?
They jumped me when I was 20. I hung out and I would leave, man.
Yeah.
And one day I was cornered.
Holy shit. So you're like,
in a hard place.
You're like, I got no choice. Like, I gotta be part of this shit. Like, this is it. This is it for me. I went to high school in Jersey City. And Jersey City, we were like, you know, we're these poor immigrant kids. And we used to live next to the projects. So we were like, there were like 5, like, Indian and Pakistani kids in the school. It's all Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, and black kids. Like, this is it.
Is Jersey City by Hoboken?
Jersey City is closer to Hoboken, not by Hoboken, but it's closer to Hoboken. Yeah.
I did a reality show in that area. A lot of Cubans that like older men Cuban, but that they used to be an old Cuban community, huh?
In Hoboken?
Jersey City too, right?
You know, I don't remember a lot of Cubans, but big Dominican and Puerto Rican population, massive. Like,
you know that comedian Joey Diaz.
Love Joey Diaz, yes.
Right, not about the he's in the ha-has.
That's right. He's from the
North Bergen.
Yeah, he's from North Bergen, New Jersey. Yeah, that's right. He's totally an East Coast guy. I mean, everything about him reeks of East Coast. Jesus Christ, when he opens his mouth, you're just like. First, I thought he was Italian when he started talking. I was like, is he Italian? It was like, no, he's from the East Coast. That's everybody from the East Coast talks like that.
You grew up next to the projects. You could, like, you growing up in that area. Like, I remember I was working with that comedian, Finesse Mitchell.
Yes. He's been on my show. Yeah.
We're in the South. We went to, put it this way, man. Every time I appoint somewhere, I bet, you think those are projects? And then I would ask, you think those are housing projects? Because what are you asking me? And I don't know. I just like pointing them out.
You know, Felipe, it's so different, like, growing up on the East Coast versus the West Coast. Like, you were getting jumped at, like, 1920 to be like, yo, you're going to be part of the gang. On the East Coast, for us, you just don't want to get your ass whooped walking from school to home. Like, that's all you're trying to do. You're not ass. We weren't cool enough to ask to be in a gang. We just simply weren't. And we're like scrawny little Indian and Pakistani kids. Nobody's asking us shit, okay?
I want to hang around. You know what's funny? When I go to downtown L.A., we have friends that have clubs in downtown L.A., you know? You get to go hang out there.
Yeah.
And there's a guy that works right there on 3rd and Wall. He works in one of those shops. It's called Buddha Place. They sell dispensaries and all kind of glassware, wholesale.
Okay.
It's like the garment industry, but it starts off. Government District in Los Angeles starts off on 3rd Street, 3rd and Wall. And right 3rd and Wall is glassware, like bongs. Anything that has to do with glass.
Yes, yes.
And then the next street is stuffed animals.
Yeah.
And then it spreads all the way to 9th Street, which becomes the Garment District. But in this area, there's a guy, dude, I look at this guy, And I thought he was a Mexican dude. You know, he's dark like me. You know, a little darker. And he carries himself like a little cholo thug. And I didn't know that he was a Pakistani guy.
No shit.
Said, what's up? He goes, what's up, Paki? What's up, G? And this fool has assimilated to LA culture, like assimilated
wow.
to the point where if you, he could be, the cop won't know what he is, you know?
Yeah.
Mexican, but he had no accent, you know?
And
the way he talks, it sounds like he was born and raised by a thug-ass family in South Central.
Oh, my God. Is he an immigrant or is he born and raised here? Do you know?
I don't even know, man. But he speaks both languages. You know, yeah. English, Pakistan, and Spanish.
Wow. Of course he speaks. Yeah.
He has tattoos like gangland here in Los Angeles. You know, he looks like one of the guys you would see in gangland. And I'm not stereotyping him, but that's what he looked like.
Yeah, does he wear the button-up shirt like the cholos do with the collar and everything? Is
he had a white T-shirt always to the top, nicely pressed, and his shoes nicely pressed. He has Cortez, you know.
Yeah, Cortez for sure.
His hair is slicked back, but sharp, man.
Yeah, is he tatted up? He got tats.
Yeah, he has tats.
Cholo. Let me tell you something, Felipe. When he goes home to his parents, he ain't acting, so he covering that up. By the way.
Yeah, I know. His task start up here.
Yeah.
Not right here.
He could be all like cholo at work, but when he goes home, he's like, yes, mommy, yes, daddy. Yeah, all that come right out.
The shop is well run.
Yeah. The Pakistani parents don't fuck around with stuff like that, Felipe. They're like, what did you say?
12 hours a day.
Say that again?
He's there working 12 hours a day. I never see him anywhere else.
Yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds about right. You are expected to work this long if you come from a Pakistani parents, man. They don't fuck around with shit like that. I remember when I joined high school here, and I was hanging out with a lot of my friends were Puerto Ricans and Dominicans and black girls. I was hanging out. That was my group. You know, so you're also one of the cool kids. Then you're talking like them, and then you're doing the neck thing, and you're doing all of that because you're trying to blend in. And then you come home and you try to do that shit at home, and your family checks you real hard, real fast. They're like, wait. Don't fucking forget where you come from. Go back to oppression. Let's go. Go make
it. You can't be asking for your allowance if you have allowance. Like, man, what are my ends?
Exactly. Get back to where you
blend in. Well, I think here in America or anywhere part of America, you blend into whatever culture is the popular.
That's
like,
correct.
Like over here, if you're hanging around with a bunch of Mexicans, I don't care if you're African American,
yep,
Chinese, Vietnamese,
yep,
you just jump into that culture that's the biggest culture.
Yep.
Like I know in my neighborhood, if you're Vietnamese, if you're Filipino, and if you're African American, you were raised in a Latin culture. Like you know how to make mole.
Yeah.
You know? Everybody that grew up where I grew up, whether you're black or Vietnamese, you know how to make Mexican food.
Yeah. Know? Yes. Like, my friend Tamer Catan is an Egyptian comedian. And he grew up in a primarily Mexican neighborhood. So when I initially met him, I thought he was Mexican. And I was like, hey, man. I was like, you're Latino? He's like, no, man, I'm Egyptian. I'm like, Egyptian? He was like, yeah. He had that whole cholo thing going on. He's tatted up. I'm like, yo, what is going on right now? He's like, yeah. He's like, I grew up in a Mexican culture. He's like, all my neighbors were Mexican. This is what you did, you know?
Every time he showed up to the party, they'll be like playing that song, Egyptian Lover, baby.
I gotta ask him that, Felipe. I gotta ask him if they're playing the Egyptian Lover. And Felipe, you know, in your new special, you were talking about something that, like, really, among a gajillion things that I resonate with your stuff, one of the things you were talking about was your dad and your mom getting into like a physical altercation, and you talk about why you started doing drugs, or you were just like, so I started doing drugs, and I was listening to that, and was there like a lot of violence in your home growing up, or was it just a few incidents that you were just like
a few incidents, you know, especially my dad drank.
Yeah. Your dad was drinking. Was he a depressed? Was he going through depression? What was his thing?
I have no idea. He just liked drinking.
Okay, he just like to escape. That's his.
You know, it's funny when without the stand-up comedy, I would have kind of like not figure out where I went wrong or when I started like hiding or hiding feelings or putting a lot of bad stuff in the shelf.
Yeah.
You know, like when you watch the Joker, like relate to the movie so much, you know.
Yeah.
And when you watch it, and then when you start noticing that he never saw that girl in the movie, spoiler alert, and you start seeing when he starts going crazy, and you start noticing, okay, he went crazy when he stopped taking those pills,
you know, right?
And then he didn't need them no more. So now he was like he was on his own craziness.
Right. He accepted his craziness altogether.
Yeah. He knew already. And then when he got the bad news about his mom, it was just over the top.
Yeah.
And then they show him bombing on live TV as a comedian, man. You want to kill yourself right there.
That's right. Exactly.
What was funny was when, as a comedian, man, you always want to be somewhere killing, you know?
Yeah.
As a comedian.
Yeah,
have someone a partner with you, who's like all into you, you know.
Yeah,
you want to impress them, you know, like hey, you know what this is what I do, you know, and I do it well.
Yes, precisely.
And so watching that movie, and I knew I kind of was like guessing, like I was like, "Eesh, this has to be his brain because nobody goes home with a hot chick like that after a set like that. I don't care who you are."
Exactly. Yeah, I don't give a shit. Exactly.
I mean, even if you, I don't know what it's like to be a woman, but that's a creepy guy up there. You know what I mean?
That's all we deal with is creepy guys. Everywhere we go.
A woman would just go crazy, open up his set list.
Exactly. Felipe, if you kill, this is what happened. Before you were married and stuff, and because you know you were like killing it, all these girls were like, "Oh my god, Felipe's like so cute. I want to see him. Oh my god, I want him." I get the creepiest motherfuckers coming and calling up on me. Creepiest motherfucker, like, "Hey, what's your name? You think I can walk you to your car? No, get the fuck away from me. No."
It's hard. It's hard for a woman comedian. I'm starting to realize, you know, because from everything you heard, and I don't know if you read have you read Ali Wong's book?
I haven't read her book, but I watched her special. She's great.
The new one, not the one. It's a new book that she has out, and it comes with a lot of kind of like, which I'm gonna do with my next. If I write a book, I'm not just gonna write my autobiography. I'm gonna write a self-help book for young comics.
Yeah.
So she said that she said that as a female comic, you know, you kill or whatever. You know, you're hanging around with these comics at the end of the night. You know how comedians do?
Yeah.
But at the end of the show, male comics, you know, they never like, everybody says goodbye, right? And you know that that male comics is going to his car.
Yeah.
He's going to his car. But you never think about anybody, you know? You don't ever think about what's going to happen to him on the way to his car. Especially what's going to happen to her on his way to her car.
That's right.
And she said in her book that you really gotta watch your back, you know.
Yep.
Make sure like a security guard or somebody watches you to your car, especially if they're good set.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of creeps out there or try to, you know, hook up with the bigger comics, you know, or you know, a big comic, you know, befriend him, you know, have the guy walk to your car, you know, watch your back.
Yes.
And I was like, goddamn. Because I remember there's a comedian named, a female comedian, and she was the headliner before us. I was co-headlining. And they told us that, well, you're not going to stay at this hotel because the last comedian tore up the hotel.
Whoa.
You have to stay at a different hotel.
Okay.
It wouldn't mean the last comedian tore up the hotel. And I talked to the front desk. And she said that I didn't talk to the manager. of the club told me that, you know, he's going to give me the full details. So he's going to give me his opinion, you know, of her, of the female comic. So I went to the front desk. And he said that there was a psychotic fan that said, that showed up to her room and she said, oh, this is supposed to be a key for me. She left it for me. A hotel key for me. And the hotel said, I don't know what you're talking about. You know what you're talking about? And he knew the name. You know what room you're staying is? No. But that's my girlfriend, man. What the fuck? That's my girlfriend. Man, this guy made a scene downstairs like a psychotic maniac that he had to get hogtied, right? So it doesn't end there. She's snapping. She's drunk. She left the bar. You know, she's a comic. She's the headliner. It's a Thursday night. She has the room is three quarters full. She's on top of her game at this time, you know? This is 1998, 99. I'm there headlining. I'm opening for Sully McCullough and Gene Pompa. And I'm the front desk telling me all this. She said this guy was going nuts and they arrested him. So the police now go to her room knocking like police officers. Are you all right, ma'am? Are you all right, ma'am? She's drunk. She don't know what the fuck's going on. She's freaking out. She don't know there was a guy arrested downstairs. She don't know there was a guy looking for her downstairs. Luckily, the hotel protected her from all this.
Oh my goodness.
Should have just went over there. Or not even go over there. Wait till the morning and deal with it. So the police is over there going, knocking real hard. And so she's freaking out. She's looking for a weapon.
Exactly. What are you going to do?
For a weapon, right? So she breaks the pipes out of the sink because she's, you know, that woman scared straight, you know. And then she starts banging it on the door. Get the hell out of here, you motherfucker, whatever. Bashes the door, starts trashing everything out of fear, goes back to sleep. Never opens the door.
So wait, then she wakes up and then they're like, yeah, hey, listen, the cops were here. And she's like, what the fuck? Like,
what? I don't know the cops. I thought the crazy maniac trying to get to my room, mate.
Holy shit. Felipe, I did a show about a year and a half ago. I was doing the casinos up in Arizona and in Vegas and in Nevada. And I remember doing a set and having a fucking fantastic set. Creepy guy was sitting up front and he just kept doing this. And then he was like waiting for me. He was like, hi. He's like, what are you doing now? I'm like, getting away from you. Like, and he just lurked around and I had to ask the security to walk me to my room and make sure he doesn't see where the hell I'm staying. I mean, this is a real thing for women. Like, we can't just be like, I killed. Now I'm going to get all the ass I want. It's like, no, I'm going to get fucking chopped up in somebody's freezer. That's what the fuck's going to happen.
Scary, man. You don't know what you're going to get as a female comic. You might get that angry guy. You know, you ain't funny. You didn't make me laugh.
That's right. Well, yeah. I'm on the internet.
I get that a lot when it was a bunch of group of people and there's one that was forced to go to the party. Whatever.
You don't get that anymore.
Sometimes, you know, if they don't know me.
Yeah.
You're right. They just tell you, I don't get them no more. But I don't want to, like, but sometimes, you know, like people after shows, they want to go hang out with you after the show. Yeah. But I learned it from an older comic named Larry Omaha. You know, if somebody invites you to the party, but there's a party going on where you're at already, screw that party. You're going to go to that party with no powers no more. You're going to go to a party. You're going to leave a party where you're Superman, man. You're with a bunch of superheroes who all went up.
Yeah.
We got female superheroes here who killed, who are wearing capes. We're wearing capes. There's a bunch of people here that we saved. Happy to see us.
Yeah.
I want to go somewhere else where I'm going to be fucking Bruce Wayne. Somewhere where I'm going to be Clark Kent.
Right.
So that made a lot of sense to me.
Right.
You're going to go somewhere where nobody knows you and they're going to say, well, make me laugh. You know, you don't want to do a second show.
Right. Exactly. Felipe, now, like, so you've been doing comedy since 1994. For you, like, now when you perform, like, do you ever, I mean, you just what? You just call up comedy clubs and you're just like, I'm running a set. Like, not right during the pandemic, but before that, you're just like, hey, I'm coming in. Like, what are your kind of go-to comedy clubs in LA?
My go-to comedy club were probably the Comedy Store.
Okay.
But before that, I was going to the Laugh Factory. James Lozada.
Sure.
He used to show me a lot of love. So I would do Latino night.
Yeah.
And then Tuesday night, Wednesday night.
Yeah.
And then I would do, because they have the Long Beach Club.
Yes.
I would do that Thursday. Then they have San Manuel Casino, which pays triple the money.
Yeah.
And I would, but you got to drive to the casino.
Yes.
And I didn't have a car back then. So yeah. My wife would work at the bartender somewhere. No, as a waitress. Okay. So I would catch a bus to the Laugh Factory to do the second spot on the 8 o'clock show. And then... Yeah.
In Long Beach, you're talking about?
Yeah, at the Laugh Factory in Hollywood.
Okay, okay.
And then from there, I would catch the blue line to Long Beach Laugh Factory to do the ending of the 10 o'clock show.
Got it.
The last comic. And then from there, I would go to back to the Laugh Factory.
Yeah.
To the 1240 spot.
Sheesh. And the first
show.
Sheesh.
And I would do that like every week unless somebody booked me.
Yeah. Philippe, what year was it for you? How long were you doing comedy for before you were like, all right, now I'm beginning to get paid for this? Like, what was that year for you?
I guess 99.
Okay, so that's only 5 years.
Yeah, 1999. Because I was not making that much money because I still had a job at Dodger Stadium and in the daytime. So I would work at, when I first started off, I had a job from 7 to 3 at Allied Signal. It was like a government security place.
Yeah.
I was just there watching the people IDs all day. That's all I did. So I would just watch people.
Writing jokes?
Huh?
You're writing jokes while you're at work?
And listen to the talk radio on AM all day and waving people.
Okay.
And then from there, I would go to Dodger Stadium.
Yeah.
Where I had to have a personality. I put on my little smock and I was a cashier for beer, or sometimes I would make Yoshinoya or Taco Bell. I worked at Taco Bell for like 5 hours, you know? I learned everything about Taco Bell.
Yeah.
So if they ever need me to go to Taco Bell, I'm ready. Yeah. You know, yeah. I worked at Yoshinoya making teriyaki chicken.
Okay.
A fast food Japanese place. We made little bowls of rice. I learned how to make all that.
Yeah.
And when that company left, we went back to hot dogs.
Yeah. Yeah,
but
yeah,
I worked at a job at Dodger Stadium. When I was a teenager, I would sell souvenirs. Like, souvenirs!
You're the souvenir guy?
Yeah.
You're the souvenir guy.
Years old. And man, I remember being so little, dude. Like, so little. I mean, going with all these people here were 21, 22 years old kids.
Yeah.
And I remember coming home with like $80 in cash. They would pay you cash.
Yeah.
And catching the bus by myself late at night was scary, man. Because I would catch the bus on Sunset with other Dodger employees and then go to downtown LA. And, you know, I was scared. I would try to make friends with older men.
It's shady today. I can't even imagine what it was like back then.
Shady back then because there were no lofts. Like back then, if you were an artist, you were a real artist. There were no Ralphs. There was no 7-Eleven. Waiting there, man, eating my burrito. Sometimes people pass by ask for a bite. For real, one time the guy said, give me a bite. So I just cut it in half and say, here, man. I was holding onto the bus stop, and I could see behind me, like, people selling crack. Like, serious. Holy. I would take the bus to my where I live. And I would see my friends, and it was like a bad area already, man, my neighborhood. But people knew me, and plus, I knew how to avoid the. You know, it's funny. When you live in a bad neighborhood.
Yeah.
How did you grow up there? How did you live there? You gotta walk through a maze, you know.
Yeah.
You can avoid these people, you know.
Yes, and you figure a way out. You're just like this.
Figure a way out, you know. Yeah. I knew this a guy crazy. That.
Yeah. Yeah,
that, there was a guy that we had on a podcast, and the way he avoided getting jumped, well, he would just pass by with a basketball, And then as long as he's bouncing it, they know that he's not a Crip or a Blood.
Interesting.
So he would just go, and he would just bounce the ball.
Did he live in Compton?
You know, he lived in South. He lived in a project with us.
Oh wow!
He would play. He would play basketball at Lincoln High School, which is far.
Uh-huh.
That's a long walk, man. If you don't have a car or a bus.
What did you do to kind of? You just had a route, or were you bouncing a basketball too?
No, I was just, people knew me. I was a popular kid.
Mm.
A lot of these kids, they knew me because I made fun of them, you know, in elementary.
Because of the funny guy.
Yeah. And,
were you always funny, Felipe? Were you always, as a kid, were you always like that funny kid?
One of the things, well, a lot of my friends, they knew that I grew up with. When we were in junior high school, I remember that we had a bagging contest, like a roast battle. But we were just talking about people's moms. But it wasn't no mama, like
your mom.
It was no like your mom is so fat. Nah, man, it was personal stuff, man. Like if I knew you were an immigrant, or if I knew your mom had one nipple and you told me not to tell nobody, I'm gonna tell somebody today. If I knew
your mom got one nipple, Felipe.
If I knew that you wet the bed at sleepovers and then put plastic under you, people wanna know right now.
Oh shit, dude.
If I know that they put plastic under your mattress and your sheets so you won't soak up a bed, I'm gonna let everybody know. That's why people were afraid to make fun of me because I knew everything, man. I've been to your house to eat nothing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You're like, I've been to your broke ass house. You ain't got nothing.
The house and the roaches were ice skating, bro.
Ice skating?
The roaches were ice skating in my friend.
Listen, man. Listen, that struggle's real. Well, we lived in a one bedroom basement apartment in Jersey City, and let me tell you something. Roaches. I used to sleep
next to window.
No windows. Felipe, one night I woke up and I heard somebody was knocking on my ear, and I was like, "Who the fuck is knocking on my ear?" You know what it was? A roach had climbed all the way inside my ear, and I had to wake up and get an ear, you know, a cleaning ear, and put it inside. And half of its body was dead, and the other half was beating against the drum. Is what woke me up.
People don't understand what white privilege is. White privilege is not having a story like that.
Exactly. And let me tell you something, Felipe. There's also such thing as brown privilege, because I know rich ass Pakistani kids who were born and raised here, they never had that story.
I know, man. They never lit a cone and shit.
Exactly.
Is there a lot of because I know in Mexico the movies are more about class, because they're all the same over there, you know? Everybody's brown. So more like rich against poor in Mexico. Is that a lot in the Pakistani movies?
Pakistani movies suck in general, like especially the older stuff. It's always, there's always a fat chick that's dancing. We're like really big on fat chicks, like really big on fat chicks.
Is that true that, because I know in the Philippines,
yeah,
I know a lot of Filipinos, and they will tell me that, oh man, if you're this fat in Philippines, that means you're rich.
Exactly. In Pakistan, it's the same thing. If it's like, we love watching fat chicks with big titties and big ass, like, do the jumps from the beds. I don't know why they're jumping. Like, nobody knows, because it's like kind of our weight contest. So they're just like jumping. So we love watching fat bitches jump up and down. But Bollywood is what we grew up on, right?
Yeah.
Mostly. It's the Indian movie. So Bollywood has, there's always a song. There's always some bitch singing by the tree. I don't know why she's singing by the tree. They just bust into a song out of the blue. There's always a love story. There's always the guy's poor and the girl's rich. Or the guy's coming from America and has no fucking American accent. He speaks with a hardcore Indian accent. So there's always like those kind of stories that we, but there's always a dance number. There's always music. People are always dancing and singing.
I always see a guy walking by himself with nice, with like Scott Baio haircut by himself in the park.
Yeah.
Come out of nowhere and they start singing.
Yeah, exactly. With the white sneakers and the mom jeans. Yeah. Have you seen those? Yeah. They're real precious with the mustache, where you're just like, oh, that's a child molester mustache, man. I don't know about that one.
I saw a movie that's different from the regular Bollywood movies. It was about a female woman, and she was like a detective, and she was looking for
It's on Netflix?
Yeah, and she's a detective, and she's like one of the first detectives, I guess, in India.
Yes.
She's investigating, sex crimes.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
And then people, you saw it?
Yeah, I've seen parts of it, yes.
It's funny because it was all serious, but at the end, they start dancing.
I'm telling you, man.
I was not expecting them to dance at all because I'm not used to watching the movies.
Yes.
But at the end, I'm like, okay, this is cool. Okay,
yeah.
She's kicking ass. All right. But in the end of the movie, they broke out dancing, even the bad guy. I was like, whoa, okay.
Yeah, everybody's dancing. Because that's the only thing we come together on. Other than that, we want to kill each other. Dancing is the only thing we come together on. Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, it's like you come here and you're trying to like blend in and you're trying not to smell of curry when you go to high school because kids pick on you. They're like, oh, you smell like curry. Oh, you curry kid. And you're just like, do I smell like curry? But I like this curry. What the hell? I eat this stuff every day. Like, what the hell? Did you, like when you grew up in like a primarily, Mexican neighborhood, I mean, when you went to school, like middle school and high school, it's primarily Latino kids, right?
Man, there was a bunch of Latino kids, and the only time we had a kid in my junior high school that was white was a guy named Paul, and he was white. Like, he had blue eyes, blonde hair, and my teacher scared him and kicked him out of the class. Yeah, he ran out of the class.
What?
My teacher from junior high school, I was taking an English class,
was
Mr. Root, by the way, R-O-O-T. And Mr. Root was an English teacher, and one day he decides to start teaching his own style of English. He brought in his friend, this guy who had a t-shirt like mine right now, and he was just high, and he sat down right there just taking notes for him and agreeing to everything Mr. Root said. Mr. Root went to Kent High, Kent University, where they shot those kids in the 1970s.
Yeah.
He was in that college when that happened.
Oh, wow. So,
he goes, everybody, tomorrow bring in your favorite album, your favorite music album.
Yeah.
We start playing like oldies, Diana Ross, and these LPs. And then this kid named Enrique, he has I never forget this. I never heard Iron Maiden before. Iron Maiden 666 album. And it was 666. And Mr. Root played the first song, and it was Run to the Hills. And it starts up. The white man came across the sea. He brought us pain and misery. He killed our tribes. He killed our queens. He took our game for his own need.
Oh,
we fought him hard. We fought him well out on the plains. We gave him hell. Man, Mr. Root. When he listened to that heavy metal song by the British singers, Iron Maiden, it resonated to him, I guess. Because from that point on, for the next 2-3 weeks, all we did was break down that album lyrically and historically. So we learned history. He taught us that the white man came in here and killed a bunch of Indians, you know, stuff that was not in the history books.
Yes.
He taught us that. And then, like, the only white guy in our class named Paul, he couldn't take it, right? Because he kept saying the white man did this. Then he kept looking at him. Then the white man, you know, killed all these Indians. It says right here in his lyrics. I mean, if they wrote it in these lyrics, it has to be part of history. You know, it's part of U.S. history. And then the guy, the Paul said, finally, he couldn't take it no more. Fuck you, Mr. Root. Fuck you. And then He stormed out of the classroom crying. And then he said, you see, it's going to be very, very hard for people like him to accept the truth.
Yeah.
And what else did he say? And man up to everything that his ancestor did. And he said, I know that he didn't do none of those things that we're reading about.
Yeah.
But he wanted to hear about it, you know.
Especially
with a bunch of people that were affected. Which is not fair for me to do this. And when you come back, I'm going to apologize. But he took it deep, man. And It reminds me,
you know, the very first time before I started doing comedy, I didn't freaking know anything about comedy. First time I ever, a Puerto Rican friend of mine was just like, yo, you want to go to a comedy club with me? So he took me to Caroline's because I grew up in New York City. I moved out from Jersey at about 18 years old. I moved from Jersey City to New York. I ended up becoming friends with this guy, and he was just like, yo, want to go to a comedy club? I've never been to a comedy club before. I was like, sure. So he takes me to Caroline's, and who's performing? Paul Mooney. Paul Mooney is on stage, okay? And like an asshole, I go and sit up in the front, Felipe.
Damn.
What the hell? My friends are like, are you sure you want to sit in the front? I'm like, yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm an idiot. I sit in the front, Paul Mooney, okay? It's all majority. There's only one white couple there, and everybody's like Latino and black and every other race, right? And Paul Mooney is going in on white people. He is going in deep. You know how he goes.
It's all funny, but he's trying to make them leave.
That's exactly what they did. They got up. They got so uncomfortable. They left. And he was so nice to me, Felipe. I can't even tell you. He's like, he has his bucket of champagne. He says, yo, can you bring 3 glasses? And next thing you know, he's pouring us champagne and making us go and cheer with him. So that's like Paul Mooney to me. I'm like, holy shit. And then later as a comic, you learn about him. I'm like, oh my God, I was sitting in front of Paul Mooney. Holy fuck.
Paul Mooney will say stuff like this. Oh, where was All Lives Matter from 1690 to 1968? Exactly. Where was All Lives Matter from 1690 to 1968? I want to know.
That's right.
We'll just dig into that. Yes. Give you a history of bad stuff that happened from 1619 to 1968 with throwing All Lives Matter as a punchline. Genius.
That's right. It's genius. Felipe, who were your kind of comedic inspirations growing up? Who did you watch and you were like, I want to be like that comic?
Man, I wanted to be like Richard Pryor. You know, like to tell those type of stories, you know, the ghetto ass stories that people could relate to.
Yes.
And
he had a hard life.
The first comedian I memorized everything was Bill Cosby.
Right, you talked about that.
Yeah. I don't want to be like him.
No, you don't. Nobody wants to be like him, Felipe.
Like people say, but that's the guy I grew up with. Yeah, I grew up liking the act.
That's right.
Comedian. I don't know what these guys do when they go home.
That's right. Exactly.
Hey, I like baseball. I like professional baseball. I like baseball players. You know, I like what's his name, Kershaw. I like him as a pitcher, but I'm pretty sure I'm not gonna like him as a driver. You know,
right? Exactly. Like him
cutting me off.
Michael Vick. You probably maybe watch him, but you're like, I'm not gonna leave my dog with him. How about that?
Yeah.
I'm not leaving my dogs around this guy.
But I better not see him in a dog park.
Exactly. Hey, man, you know, let's get that restraining order out here. I don't think you should be here right now around dogs and shit. So you wanted to be like Richard Pryor. You wanted to be like, those were your big influences. Has that evolved for you? Like what has happened for you as you have gone along as a comic?
First of all, my first taste of stand-up comedy was when someone loaned me a tape, and it was a tape with 7 stand-up specials in it.
Wow.
I sat there and watched my friends and I. We sat there in junior high, and we watched Howie Mandel's 1-hour HBO special, Robin Williams, the one with the Hawaiian t-shirt and the hairy arms.
Yes.
The Howie Mandel, the one where he blows up that balloon. And he had that pocket, that little bag that was like a hand.
Okay. I haven't seen it.
And he had hair too. He had hair.
He had hair? That's amazing.
Ellen DeGeneres, half-hour special. The Young Comedians, Rodney Dangerfield, Young Comedians show. He had Dice Man, Sam Kinison, and Jerry Seinfeld, and Robert Townsend.
Wow.
And Sam Kinison on the show. Did I mention him already?
Wow, Sam Kinison. Yeah, that's really something, huh?
And, you know, when I watched him, I was like, he was kind of like Richard Pryor, but different, you know, like when he talked about how he made those people from Africa, Ethiopia. That joke was kind of funny.
Yeah. Because
I don't want to kill the joke, but it was funny the way he said it, you know, like, and the way he would talk about, he goes, "You're getting married? I've been married 5 times. Look at my face." Or yeah. I remember Ralphie May, the late Ralphie May. Aww. "Yeah, buddy, what the fuck are you talking about, Sam Kinison?" he told me that Sam Kinison went out really late at late night, and said, and he was feeling down, and Sam Kinison got it real honest with the people, shared a story, and he said, "I want you to write down a story. I want you to write down on a napkin a loved one that you know, a loved one that you miss, someone that passed away that you love or you love, and you want to see him." And the waitress is going to go fill it and pick it up. Man, when he got all those napkins, Rafi May said, "Now I'm going to go home and wipe my ass with one of these, every single napkin in your in their honor. Move on, people."
Yeah, that sounds like Ralphie May for sure.
Yeah, Sam Kinison did that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, wow, man. I mean, that's what I want to. I always want to get to. Like, I'm not
dark as shit, by the way, Felipe. Stage. Yeah, yeah.
Comfortable stage when you're joking around like a friend now with the audience, you know, where
yeah,
or whatever you say, it's gonna be funny because it's something that actually happened. You know, you can write jokes based on what they know already.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of, you know, you had mentioned crack before. How long did you do crack for, Felipe, before you went into rehab?
Not that long, about a year and a half.
Oh, okay.
And, but then I was off of it. But see, I'm different. Like some addicts,
yeah.
Some addicts could pick it up. You know, like gamblers.
Yeah.
They gamble every single day, and they make a living out of their gambling. You know. And I cannot gamble like that. Me, I gamble one night, and I lose everything, and I'm sad, and I go home, and I won't do it. I won't do it again for another 3 months. So that's how it was. Was my addiction was that I would stop, but then I'll pick it up again.
Mm.
You know, I remember I was in Dallas, Texas, and Ralphie May joked around about it. I ordered I called a room service. And I ordered a big fat spoon and baking soda.
Oh, shit.
And they brought it. I got 2 standing ovations that week.
You're like, "We know what the fuck you're doing in your room. We know exactly what the fuck you're doing in your room." Wow. Wait, so was this kind of a known thing where you like going on stage and being like, "Yo, I do crack"? Like, were you talking
about it? No, it was not known. Nobody knew because I would just disappear. It's funny when you're like sober.
Mm.
When I first started doing stand-up comedy, I was sober. I didn't drink at all.
Yeah.
I didn't at all. None of those things. I was sober.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would just do my set, talk to people, talk to them in the club, you know, and talk to them in the parking lot, and I would leave. I didn't know these guys were staying later than me and doing drugs. So I started staying later. You know, everybody left, other good comics, you know, they're all bad comics. Everybody got their vice, but they don't do the stuff that we do. So they would leave. And after that, man, let's open up that comedy club. Let's go back inside. Eh? For real, I would hang out with at comedy clubs where after everybody said goodbye,
we would
go back in there and open up the comedy club and go back to drink until 4 a.m.
Wow.
And I didn't – this world wasn't – this part of comedy wasn't open for me.
Uh-huh.
I didn't stay up to it. I would go home before 12. I would go home before – I would go home before 3 a.m, you know?
Right. But
this lifestyle and more people knew, I started getting strange gigs. Like, I remember I got a show at 2 a.m. with a bunch of comics from the comedy store. And we get there, and the show starts at 2. And we do our comedy, and they paid us. And man, this is one of those parties where it was like Disneyland. If you like drugs, man, it was like this house was made for partying. Like,
oh, shit. You
know, I don't know. I'm not saying sometimes, but in the hood, when you go to a house party, people pee outside.
That's men right.
Pee on the side of your wall, on the side of your... Right. This guy had bathroom stalls installed on the side of his house.
Wow.
So, you know, when you go to, like, when men pee in a stall, you flush it?
Yes.
He had those built in outside, like there was three of them. Wow. So there was no excuse to pee anywhere in outside. There was two, three places where you could just whip it out and pee.
He just knew what was going to go down. He was prepared for it.
He had an RV, like a little miniature RV that'll fit two people to sleep and four people to hang out and five people to hang out in that little room.
Yeah.
Play jazz within a jazz station all night. You go there and just smoke pot.
Wow.
You want to smoke weed and get away from the chaos that's in the house.
Yeah.
And then there was a jacuzzi where the only way you could go in there if you're naked and no shorts. You gotta be naked. So you know me, man. I couldn't go into a pool without a t-shirt on or nobody could see my feet, so I didn't go in the water. But
that's what you were worried about?
Your feet. In the house, there was hidden compartments for drug addicts.
No shit.
Like
is there drugs in the compartments?
Man, my friend said, look over there. And I looked over there, he grabbed that, and I grabbed it, and it was a nasal spray, like a nasal spray, you know? But the nasal spray was filled with drugs, cocaine, I guess, and water. So it was a mixture of cocaine and water. I don't know if you've ever done drugs, but sometimes when you snort drugs, it gets stuck right here in your nasal canals. So you got to grab a bunch of water to snort it all, slurp it all out, you know, so it won't stay up there. So with this guy figured that out too. He had squirters with cocaine and water that had the right amount of coke not to kill you if you don't do it too much. No. And every time I go there, my friend would go. And then there was another one. They were hitting all over the house. And there was another room where they were doing actual powder cocaine, where away from everybody, if you want to go over there and it was free.
It's like an Easter egg hunt.
Machines in the house, man. There was a ledger that everybody signed, and all the names were there of everyone that had ever partied there. The house looked like it was 6 p.m. all day in there.
Dang.
We're all locked. And the AC was like Vegas, you know, when you lose track of time. And
that's right.
So I opened up when I did my show, I knew by the time the show started, I knew where all those squirt bottles were already. So I did a lot of references to the squirt bottles. You know what? Over there, right? Left to the corner. So I jokes. And I remember I said that this show reminds me of that movie Pinocchio.
Uh-huh.
I feel, because a lot of us don't want to be here, but we got to be there. We got to get paid. But we're going to watch a lot of people in the morning, or actually in 4 hours, we're going to see a lot of people turning into donkeys. You know what it feels like? I feel like we're all having a good time. We're all having the best times of our lives right now. But sooner or later, man, it's not going to, we're going to snap out of it.
Yeah.
On the couch, figure out what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
I left at noon.
Holy shit. Felipe, so the drugs are just available and the guy's not like, yo, you got to pay up. It's just like, no. Yeah, it's just for free. Enjoy.
And don't smoke crack and don't smoke meth.
No crack and no meth. So because he's providing all the drugs.
Yeah, not all the drugs, but it was BYOC.
Bring your own cocaine? Listen, for someone who's never done cocaine, I knew that right away somehow. I've never been able to afford cocaine, Felipe. That's what it is.
But this is the funnier part, man. Like, to get invited back to the party, the guy will text you or you get invited. So me, I guess I have a big personality, and I was pretty much buzzed and drunk to the whole time, just watching everything, watching my back.
Yeah.
That I started like picking up empty bottles, you know, like the mom in me, and I would put them in a trash can. And then the guy said, "You know what? You just earned 5 Dougie points." And then I went and it, like that, and as soon as I picked up a bottle and threw in the trash, the owner, who didn't know the owner of the house, came up to me and said, "You know what? You just got 2 Dougie points." And I went to go tell my friend who invited me to the party. He goes, "What do you mean by Dougie points?" He means that if you just did him a favor, you know, you threw the trash away, that means that you got a Dougie point, you know. Like you got points with him, you know. Like, you know, you got a lot of points with him. So by the end of the night, I probably had the most Dougie points in the whole party history. Straight up, Felipe, give me your phone number. I'm gonna call you personally for the next party. Yeah, the clean motherfucker.
Exactly. He's like, "Hey man, you do drugs. You can add the drugs, but you earn your drugs. That's what you do."
Yeah.
That is an incredible, Felipe. I have never been invited to a party to come and do cocaine or do any kind of drugs. I've literally been offered cocaine once. That was it. And she kept going to me. She's like, "Do you want a party?" She kept going like this, and I was like, "Is something stuck in your nose?" And she's like, "You want a party?" I'm like, "What's wrong with your nose?" And then like she means cocaine. I'm like, I'm such a square. I didn't grow up with like drugs. I smoke weed now. I smoke weed every single day. I'm a huge fan of weed. But yeah, do you smoke weed? Or are you just completely?
I was on drugs since 2011.
No, oh, 2009. So nothing. You don't do nothing.
I mean, I eat edibles and all that. Like I've been on that show, Getting Dug with High, and I've been on the Be Real Cadillac.
Yeah. But just
I'm
like
an advocate, man. I'm not like the weed comic.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the weed comic, so I'm gonna just say nah. I'm gonna leave that to Stoner Rob and and Hope. They're the weed comics, you know.
Yeah, you know, I was listening to your I was watching your list of podcasts, which you have. What's up? What's a Fool? Right, you have the podcast, and you had Martin on it, and I love Martin, and I've been on his podcast, and I've had him on. I just love Martin, and you have like so many cool guests on there. I love the fact that you give a lot of younger Latino comedians, you know, an opportunity to come and interact with you. Is that something that you're big on, to like kind of, you know, kind of maybe like a mentor in a way, and just kind of move, like, you know, provide some kind of guidance to like younger Latino comics? Is that like a thing for you?
I don't call it more like a mentor. I'm more like a Cobra Kai of comedy, man.
What is it?
If I was a mentor, it's more like Cobra Kai.
Cobra Kai, okay.
Cobra Kai of comedy, man. I'm like the Cobra Kai of comedy, man. I'm like Lawrence. I was hot, I was down, then I was hot again, and then I was down. And luckily, I'm in the middle right now.
Yeah.
I thought comic was what older comics told me, like the ones that I'm, like Paul Rodriguez.
Yeah.
He told me that, you know, if you're, you know, one thing I learned, because I've been doing it for like 22 years, 24 years now.
Wow.
And I know that now, like, when I tell a young comic, you know, if you're nice and you're cool and you're funny, like, you don't even got to be, because you don't even got to impress these guys with 45 minutes. Believe me, they don't want to hear it. You know, there ain't no comic out there, Bill Burr, these guys, they don't want to hear your 30 minutes.
Yeah.
They want to hear your 5.
Yeah.
Like me, I'm a big fan of 5s. Like, if you have a strong 5 minutes,
yeah,
that people cannot follow. People are afraid to follow you because you got the killer 5 minutes, the killer 7, the killer 10. I need you in my show.
Yeah.
I need to go up there and destroy in front of 400 people with those fucking 10 minutes.
For sure.
I'll grab somebody out of a room that with 17 people, and his 10 minutes are the funniest. And like, and I see a guy do 30. I'm not going to stay there and watch somebody for 30, but I see like a young comic with a tight 6.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's all you need, man. Because if you go to tonight's show, it's going to be 4.5.
That's right.
If you get a Conan, 5. If you get a Comedy Central, or if they are those giving, are they giving away, it's going to be 26, 22.
Yeah.
So I would focus just on, and people nowadays, they have a shorter attention span. The funnier videos are only a minute.
That's right.
The real funny ones are fucking 30 seconds. So
that's right. That's right. They're just doing
it. The best is more now.
Yes. Agreed.
Rob Schneider said too that on my show.
Yeah.
That Jay Leno told him that, No, I'm not with Jay Leno, but he said, if you have a type 5, that's all you need.
Yeah.
I would go for type 6 because if you audition for a Tonight Show,
yeah,
I will go there and do the 6, and they're going to tell you to take that joke away. And do this, do that. At least you have two minutes of more jokes to work with. You know, like they do the 4.5 minutes. They go, okay, we like this, but that last half minute, no.
Yeah.
So you can guess. You know what I mean?
Right. Absolutely. Felipe, what was your first biggest break that you had, and you were like, you know what, I have freaking arrived. Like this is it.
Well, probably winning Last Comic Standing in 2010.
Yes, that's right. First of all, what a big arrive,
too, because everybody knew, not just me.
That's right. I mean, that's a huge arrive.
We had 8 million viewers in one night.
Wow.
And killed.
That's massive. But you had been doing comedy for a while already, so you were, like, seasoned. You were, like, ready.
Yeah, man. A lot of the comics that were in front of me, they have done, like, I know that the one that took second place.
Yeah.
He already been on the Letterman show, you know?
Yeah.
He was about to do a tape a half hour, or he already had a half hour special.
Yeah.
I had none of those, man. I had, like, I was on a show called Que Locos, the one you saw. I was on 9 episodes of that. Top that. That's 9 different 5 minutes.
That's right. That's 45 minutes just for the math for the people.
Yeah, and then I did Premium Blend in 2005, and I went to Montreal Comedy Festival, and I got an agent in 2005, and I went to do a show in Rotterdam.
Okay.
Yeah, with a show called Raymond is Late, you know, but it's a Dutch show. Raymond is Lot.
Raymond is Lot. But and then what, of course, you were doing it in English, and what, they were translating it?
Yeah, I did. I was on a show. The whole show was in Dutch, and my segment was in English with Dutch subtitles. I got the opportunity to watch my set from I was in Amsterdam, and I was in a cafe, and I remember I was drinking coffee, and I had a bundt cake, you know, that was made out of marijuana cannabis.
Yes,
and I had rolled up a fat ass blunt there with Amsterdam hashish, you know, from Morocco, and some good stuff.
Yeah,
and I was drinking my tea, my coffee, waiting for, and I was eating a real cake, and they were watching a show, and I tapped at the owner. That's me, homie. In the accent. That's me, dog. Everybody goes, that's him. And I had all these guys from I don't know, Suriname, they live in Amsterdam. They were all dropping blunts on me and congratulating me.
That's amazing.
One thing I noticed when I was there was when I spoke, they noted my accent immediately from watching movies.
And
where are you from? I'm from East Los Angeles, man. Boyle Heights. Oh shit. Blood in, blood out. And then they started quoting the movie for me. Sorry, we have no tortillas.
I'll believe it. That really shows you, like, the power that American TV and film has around the world. Like, just the impact that we have.
Those guys were talking about blood in and blood out the way I have spoken to people about Godfather 1 and Godfather 2.
Mm-hmm.
To them, it's like watching The Godfather, you know, but in a Latino version.
Yeah.
And when I told them I was from East Los Angeles, they said that I have a lot of pull now. Like, I got a lot of respect in Rotterdam. And after, just by saying where I'm from, that they're going to hold doors for me. So what's up with that?
Look at that. Fucking representing, man. You are legit, just straight up representing. What I want to know, you're talking about being Mexican, you're talking about your background, you're making jokes. How does that translate to, because, you know, there's the cultural nuance of understanding and having point of reference. How does that translate to Dutch, and how do they get the jokes?
I don't know, man. I remember doing a joke about my dad would walk around the whole neighborhood and collect furniture and bring it home and fix it with tape. One time he brought a television home. I said, look, that TV got 500 channels. When I got older, it didn't have 500 channels. It was a knob from the oven.
Yeah, yeah.
They got that.
So they got that. Yeah, I'm always pretty fascinated by how stuff gets translated. I mean, you do it in English and Spanish. I'll do it in Hindi and Hindi, Urdu, and English, right? I'll do three different languages and do comedy three different languages, which is always fascinating how stuff gets, you know, what kind of nuance people get and what kind of nuance people don't get. What kind of stuff are you working on, Felipe? Are you working, like, are you getting your own TV show, man? Like, let's get you your own TV show ready.
Right now, a comedian from Mexico named, a comedian actor, a real known comedian actor, his name is Omar Chaparro. Him and I are pitching a sitcom based on, like, him and I playing brothers, kind of like that show on CBS.
Okay.
With Charlie Sheen.
Oh, 2.5 Men?
Yeah, like a Latino version of 2.5 Men.
Okay, awesome. What's it called?
And we're both brothers. We're pitching a show about us being brothers.
Okay.
And, so... We don't know what's going on yet, man. We're waiting for a couple of yeses.
Yeah. No, that's. Did you help write it, or did you?
No. Writers? No, that we were pitching the show with a lot of big shots, man.
Wow.
Omar Chaparro, Eric Tannenbaum.
Okay.
From 2.5 Men and Craig Floyd from Blackish.
Okay.
And Isaac. He wrote for the Gabriel Show and a lot of other shows.
Wow! No, that sounds pretty freaking amazing.
And but Omar and I, we worked on a movie already during the pandemic. We shot a movie back in April and May.
Okay.
Called 7th and Union. It's about a struggling immigrant with a boxer, and he's a boxer, and I play one of his co-workers. And that movie is gonna change the game for him because this is the first serious movie for him. Like, he's not even funny.
Oh,
okay. The serious. Like there were a couple of jokes that I had written for my character.
Yeah.
The scene ended up being too intense and too serious for me to throw in a joke because it would have made my character be an asshole instead of the funny guy in a lot of these scenes. So I have to find a way, you know, to throw in a funny.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I ended up getting more lines in the end at the movie. Like, they would tell me to come back, think of a line right now for this scene and just throw it out there.
Okay.
So, right, I got 5 lines ready. He goes, right, we're going to try out 5. So a couple of scenes, I was just making shit up, man, and they were just taking it.
Improving, baby.
Yeah.
That's right. That's why that sounds amazing, man. Well, good luck with that. I hope it gets picked up. I mean, I'd totally watch that show.
Steve Byrne has a movie coming out right now. Steve Byrne it's called Opening Act or Opening Night, The Opener, something like that.
Okay.
It's based on Steve Byrne. He wrote a story about his first time opening for somebody, a big comic at the Improv, and the movie is going to be played by I forgot his name right now.
Oh.
Where's
the movie being played? What is it on Netflix? What is it?
You could order on Amazon and everywhere.
Okay.
It's called The Opening Act, directed by Steve Byrne, and it's produced by Steve Vaughn and that little kid from Christmas Story.
Okay, all right.
Meet him, man. I was like in awe at the set. He was directing and producing with Steve Byrne, and yeah. I saw him with a little blonde hair, and I was trying to look at his eyeball to see if he shut his eye out.
Felipe, do you know the new documentary that's coming out about the Comedy Store? Have you seen the trailer for it?
No. But the movie stars, the cast of the movie is Jimmy O. Yang, Ken Young, Jermaine Fowler, Tom Segura, Bill Burr, Russell Peters, Neil Brennan. He put us all in this movie.
Wow.
I'm a cab driver.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
For once, it's not an Indian guy. I love that. That's great, Felipe.
Yeah.
Stepping the game up, man. I love that. I'm glad it's not one of us. I'm so tired of those freaking drivers.
Spider-Man.
Fucking tired of those freaking roles.
Yeah. Deadpool.
Deadpool, that's right. Deadpool, yeah. I mean, that kid made a lot of money. He made a shit ton of money off of that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he made a shit ton of money. Yeah, well, I don't get those roles. I don't know. I wish I would be a driver one day. That would be nice. That would be an upgrade for me. But man, this has been a lot of fun, Felipe. So during the pandemic, yeah, this has been a lot of fun, Felipe. What have you been doing during the pandemic? I mean, you have a special out. What are you working on?
I have a special out right now on Netflix called Bad Decisions, Mal Decisiones, Spanish and English. And right now, I have a show this Saturday. And Friday and Saturday at the Improv, we're doing a drive-in show, sold awesome. Out 100 cars.
Wow.
And the next day, September 26th, I'm in Norco, California at the Silver Lakes Drive-Ins. And we have enough for 400 vehicles. So Get your tickets now.
That's fun. That's amazing. Felipe, do you think that's the future of comedy for now?
Oh, yeah. But if it is, let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah. What are we going to do, right? We're just going to have to roll with the punches. Felipe, I wanted to ask you before I let you go, I want to get your kind of point of view on this, because I like to talk to comics about this. What is your kind of take? Have you been affected by the PC culture? What's your take on it, man?
Well, I always like when people like the PC culture. For me, it started way back when I was a kid. Now, I remember doing a show, and they told me just be clean. It's okay. I won't drop no F-bombs or B-bombs or whatever bombs I have, you know? You know, so I told my friend, don't drop, just be clean. So I have a joke, you know? I said that my brother, you know, he's been in prison 3 times, and every time he comes out worse. So the first time he came out a better thief. Like, he was a conniving thief. The second time, he came out a racist. Like, he hated black people and everything else. And he hated white people. He was like I never seen a brown nationalist before. But he was down for brown and nothing else.
Okay.
And the third time, oh, my God, was the worst one. My brother came out a born-again Christian. And that's hardcore. We're Catholic, you know, so he sold out.
Oh, and, shit.
They grabbed my mic. I was holding a microphone like this. And yeah. The lady who booked me just... I didn't see her creep up on me, man. And she just snatched the microphone away from me. And then she said, that'll be all for Mr. Felipe Esparza.
Oh, hell no.
They were like, didn't know what's going on because the majority of the audience was laughing. But apparently there was like a school teacher who's a devout fundamental Christian, I guess. She was not liking the show, whatever. Whatever, you know, I didn't know this, you know, coming in there, you know, it's not even a bad joke. So he goes, so man, I remember I was like sad. So man, I walked up, I grabbed my check as they paid me, and I walked out of the audience holding there, was showing people, you know, thank you very much for these 7 minutes of work. And I hold it to people, 7 minutes. I better hurry up and go to the liquor store before they stop the payment on this check. I was so bummed out, man, because I had tags for that joke. I said, my brother now steals in the name of the Lord. Like, my brother was cutting a stolen vehicle. He said it was a sign from God. The car was on. The keys was there. I was in a bad neighborhood. They're about to kill me. Better take this car. What am I, stupid? So I never got to the good punchlines.
So that's your experience with PC culture?
That was my first time. And another time I was making fun of my weight and they thought I was fat shaming. And I don't know, big people got offended, you know?
Uh-huh. Well, you were talking about yourself. You weren't talking about fat. I mean.
I was talking about myself, you know? But when I got to the casino, I said that I had the joke where I said that I was with one girl, she had stretch marks on her stomach, you know.
Mountain lion.
Yeah. You know. By the time I got to, we were offended by that part. That didn't even get to my line. I took off my t-shirt. She said, "Well, we better find these cats." You know, they didn't even let me get to the part that she said, "We better find these cats." And then I got to the part where, you know, time to lose weight when a girl starts sucking your titties.
I fucking love that.
And I got hair on my nipples. She's sucking and flossing. I recommended me. Felipe. I didn't get to that part, you know? So
Yeah.
A lot of people were saying that it was so stupid, these people, man. They wrote stuff like that the stuff that he said was very offensive. We should have a meeting with the people that put up the show so we could all speak out and have our voice, they could hear our voices. And I'm sorry, man, but you're not in college anymore, or this is the thing, life does not work like you did in college. There's gonna be no forum for you. There's gonna be none of that. You know, we're gonna move on with our lives. Just like our parents did, you know?
Right, 100%.
They're calling me stuff like sis, which I never heard. Like, sis, I don't even have cancer. Whatever. And male chauvinist, and I can't believe it. Man, they would have stopped my check for that show. Like, I was supposed to host the whole event. But there were so many bands. Also, there were like, Los Tigres del Norte were headlining. Chicano Batman, all these other bands, man, and so many different types of genres. That by the time I got there, I was going to do, they told me to do five. I mean, what they paid me, I mean, if I would have told them what they paid me for this show to do five instead of doing the whole thing of hosting, I mean, that would have hurt their feelings more than everything I said. Because at the end of the night, I felt like giving it back. Are you sure, man? Because I didn't do nothing today. This is probably my one of my best, my okay shows. Like, they weren't even ready for me. Wow. You know, you make excuses, but hey, I did my job and I got paid well, and so right. People were offended. But they're not my crowd.
That's right.
It's like the Joker said, hey. Comedy very subjective.
Subjective, exactly. Art is subjective. Yeah, art is entirely subjective. I did a show, Felipe, about a year ago, and it was a Muslim crowd, and they were praying right before I went up on stage.
Damn.
I was like, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do with this. So I just did crowd work. I was like, I don't think a lot of material is going to work out here.
I didn't want to be a doctor.
Say that again?
You should have offended by saying I didn't want to be an engineer for losers.
Exactly. Community college, people. What's up? Community college.
5 years community college.
5 years, bitches. What? Community college represent. I wasn't going to go to college. My family gave me an ultimatum, Felipe, when I came out of my artist closet at 18. I told them that I wanted to be an artist, and they told me that either I was going to go to college and become a physical therapist, or they were going to send me back to Pakistan. I was going to be married off, Felipe. Those were my options. And I said, how about I love you guys, but go fuck yourself. I'm just going to do my thing. So, and now I chose a stable career in comedy. So that's kind of where it's at for me. But this was a lot of fun, Felipe. Man, where can we find you? Where can everybody follow you?
Go to felipesworld.com. That's my webpage, felipesworld.com, or Funny Felipe on Twitter, and Felipe Esparza Comedian on Instagram.
Awesome. Felipe, this was so much fun. Sorry about the shaky start, but thank you so much for coming on. It was awesome. I had such a great time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. I will see you soon, my friend. What's thank up? You.
Cool. All right. If I go to West Nyack, you could be on our show.
Yes, please.
I'm not far from you.
That's right. Yes, absolutely. Felipe, have a great time, my friend. Right. I'll see you soon.
See you, fool.
Bye. That was a wonderful and amazing Felipe Esparza. I hope you had as much of a good time as I did. I think this is the most I've ever laughed on a podcast. So that was amazing. That was a great conversation. I love Felipe. He's so sweet and kind and humble and just was kind enough to dedicate this time. So hope you guys had a good time. If you haven't followed me on YouTube yet, please do. It would mean the world to me. I am trying to grow my YouTube channel. So please go to youtube.com/Mona Sheikh Comedian and you will find me there. Also, I have a lot of exclusive content on my YouTube that you're just not going to find anywhere else. I have my stand-up there. I have my sketches. I have my, I have all my amazing interviews like this with Felipe and all other celebrities like Margaret Cho and Congresswoman Katie Hill and blah, blah, blah. So please do go check it out. Thank you so very much. This was a lovely chat. Tomorrow I am back with a wonderful and amazing female director of Palestinian descent called Sharian Davis, who directed a few of the episodes for Rami, a hit show on Hulu that won an Emmy last year. So I will see you guys tomorrow. Same place, same time, 6:15 Pacific. Have a good night. See you tomorrow.